When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Voices from the Archives, the Irish Life and Lore series. I'm Maurice O'Keefe, and this week's edition is the landed gentry in Ireland. I've selected segments from interviews made with descendants of the landed gentry families. And this is a fascinating collection, and all the interviews are available to see on our website. That's irishlifeandlore.com. So let's get started. Barmead Castle stands proudly on the slopes of a wooden hillside in County Louth. It was originally built in the 15th century, and the Bellew family have lived there since 1670. I spoke to Lord and Lady Bellew. This is a magnificent place. It's a beautiful cascaded house.
Well, can I explain the house to you? It was, the name Barmead is actually derived from the Gaelic Bíonna Mianna, which means Maeve's Passage. And it was a tower house belonging to the Moore family. And the Bellew... Do you want me to explain how we acquired it?
Yes, please.
The Bellew, who lived in Louth, John Bellew, was banished to Galway by Cromwell, having fought against Cromwell. And he got a third of his land in Galway, Mount Bellew. Mm-hmm. And...
Even though he fought against Cromwell.
Well, the rule was that you either got executed or you went to Connaught. So it was probably more advantageous to go to Connaught. And on the restoration of Charles II, he left his younger son behind, Christopher, and he came back to Louth to try and get back his land. Mm. And he was a trained lawyer. He trained in London. And he worked for a distant cousin, the head of the Taff family, Lord Carlingford. And Lord Carlingford was a close friend of Charles II's and had the job of looking after his mistresses and illegitimate children. And John Bellew had he went round these courts, and John Bellew had an enormous advantage because he could get the king's signature on the documents through Carlingford. And at the end of, I think it was 7 years, Taff got, Lord Carlingford, got 10,000 acres and Bellew got none. And he had quite substantial lands in Louth, but it's very hard to get them back in Louth because Louth was a resettlement area for Cromwellian soldiers. And there were a lot of people trying to grab land. And in fact, Charles II's younger brother, who became James II, he also acquired 10,000 acres in Louth. Mm-hmm. So in lieu of his bill, John Bellew got Barmead, which was then occupied by a Cromwellian soldier, and 2,000 acres.
And so that was a good... That was a good settlement, if you like.
Well, it wasn't. It was very good for a Catholic family because very few Catholic families got their land back after Cromwell.
After Cromwell.
Now, much easier after the Williamite Wars, that wasn't really a problem, but that's another story. But so we were very fortunate to have this John Bellew, who was very able.
I'm here in Oxfordshire, and I'm talking to Lord Bessborough, the 12th Earl of Bessborough. You'll be 79 next week.
I will.
Were you born in Bessborough?
No, I was born in Hindhead in England, because my father was in the army and stationed nearby.
Okay. And so you would have grown up here then, would you?
I went to school in England, but I mostly grew up in County Cork. My father's mother was a Longfield at Castle Mary Cloyne, near Cloyne, and so I mostly grew up there at Castle Mary.
What was it like? What are your early memories?
I think it was very poor. Very rural. We went hunting and walking after snipe and things like that, and chasing rabbits about. But we didn't have much culture in Cloyne in those days. We didn't go to the cinema very often. I don't suppose I was particularly cultured as a teenager anyway, so we didn't have many amusements. We used to celebrate the fact that we had neighbours who had a swimming pool, and we occasionally got invited to that, but that was the height of sophistication.
Okay. Now, the Bessboroughs, your background, can you fill me in a bit on your history?
Well, we're a lot of squires from Cumbria, or Cumberland used to be called, near Egremont, so on the west coast of Cumbria. Mm-hmm. And one of my ancestors in about 1650 raised a regiment of horse, is the story, and it's all in the family history here, and went to Ireland to fight with Cromwell, I think, dare we say that. And then they got given a grant of lands, and then they got a succession of titles, and they worked in various offices of state in Ireland, and also then later in England.
Okay, and during the Confederate Wars, when they were, when your ancestors fought with Cromwell, were they high ranking? Were they?
Well, I think the the first one to do that really was a fairly high ranking soldier, which is why he was given a grant of lands. So the first one who wasn't the Earl of Bessborough, he was John Ponsonby from Cumbria, but he was given a grant of lands, and the family history tells us that another officer was jealous of this, and so he did a swap. And yep. When the Ormonds came back into power, the other chap was thrown out, and my lot kept their bit of land, which is in Kilkenny.
And then they built
a house called Bessborough, probably because one of the wives was called Elizabeth, so it was Bessborough.
Oh, I see. It was gutted. It was burnt down.
It wasn't completely gutted, yes. But it was burnt down by the IRA in the Troubles in 1920. 2021.
Why do you think they burnt it?
Well, they burnt an awful lot of Anglo-Irish houses.
Okay. And was there any particular reason why they burnt Bessborough?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Okay.
I know that my grandmother's house in near Cloyne at Castle Mary, which her parents were in at the time, we have a letter addressed to my father from the local undertaker in Middleton called Hyde, Mr. Hyde, and he wrote a letter to my father saying that they didn't have any particular animosity towards the family, but they were worried that he was being used as a garrison.
I see.
That was in the case of Castle Mary, but I don't know the background to the Bessborough fire.
I see. But both properties were burnt.
Both my father's, grandfather's and my father's mother and father both had their family houses burnt, yeah.
Temple House in County Sligo has been lived in by the Percival family for over 350 years. It's surrounded by 1,000 acres of woodland and demesne, and That's where I met and spoke to Sandy Percival.
I'm here in Temple House in County Sligo, and I'm talking to Sandy Percival. And Sandy, thank you for inviting me, and this is absolutely lovely to be with you this morning. Yes. Tell me about Temple House. How far back does it go?
Well, the castle was built by the Knights Templar. They built a tower house and they moved in about 1200. And then as you look down from here, there's a tower entrance front, which was built by the O'Haras in 1560. They were dispossessed in 1580 and it was granted to the goods, and then the Croftons came and built a brick house in 1627. George Percival married Mary Crofton in 1665, and except for a few years after the famine, we've been here since.
Oh, that's an amazing length of time for the one family to to live in this area. Have you lived here all your life?
No, I was born in South India. My father was a tea planter, and we came back when I was 8 and a half. I went to school in Dublin at Castle Park and then Columbus.
But this is a grand entrance.
It is. This, we moved up from the castle. The family moved up to two stories over a basement in 1760. And then the colonel enlarged the house in 1825. And it's a long story, but when the place was bought back after the famine, this entrance front was built on in 1864.
Yes, indeed, and it's very impressive, isn't it?
It is, yeah. With the portico.
And tell me about the stone.
It's limestone from Ballysadare, which was cut to a pattern. I'll show you the courtyard later. There's very little chips of stone in the ground around the house or the castle, because it was cut to pattern in the quarry and delivered in 11 horse carts. Now, of course, this is a stone front on a brick building inside it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so looking forward to going in and seeing the portraits, the family portraits.
Yes.
Oh, magnificent hallway. My goodness.
Yes, it's a mixture of old and new. You've got an Irish elk going back about 11,000 years. And the new would be the hall table, which was made in Dublin about 1980. And we've got the shells from a collection from the Pacific, and some stuffed birds, which, now that is actually my mother's bear. She was 17 and travelling by boat from Australia to back to England when she called into Bombay, and my uncle, great uncle, was chief police in what's now Uttar Pradesh, and she went to stay with him for a bit, and he said, if you're going to stay in India, you've got to learn to shoot. And 3 weeks later, so he gave her a 2-2. 3 weeks later, she was in a mashan watching a tiger shoot with the Maharaja. And this bear came bumbling out of the jungle and climbed the ladder. And when it was front paws were on the platform, a small platform that she and her aunt were on, Aunt Sylvia, who's a good shot, just froze. She had a 303, she could have killed it easy. But Mum put the gun into its eye, it shot it in the eye, didn't kill it, but it threw its head back, and the extra weight on the rung of the bottom rung of the ladder broke, and rolled down, and Uncle finished it off. That's an unusual story.
Oh, yes, it is. But, and to have the trophy on the,
yes,
on the wall.
Yes, and she was only 17. Yeah.
And she was only 17.
But she saved their lives, yeah.
Burrdown House at High in County Kildare is the home of the Fennell family, and that's where I met Leslie Fennell, who spoke to me about her childhood days growing up with her grandmother, the Wilson Slater family, in Whitehill, Edwardstown in County Longford.
I was born in 1943 in the middle of the war. So at that stage, the fathers were all away at the war. And the mothers were probably being nursing or driving lorries, trucks, army vehicles. I don't know all of them, but some of them were. My mother was nursing. And we all lived with my cousins and my mother and my aunts and my grandmother in my grandmother's house in Hampshire in England at that stage, because my mother was English. My father was Irish.
Okay, so here in Ireland, in Longford, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where was the house?
It was 3 miles outside Edgerstown. It was called White Hill, and it was bought by the... When my grandmother died, it was bought by the Land Commission in 1960 and was completely obliterated off the face of the landscape, except for the lodge, which was a sort of big Victorian lodge on with a house either side and a little walkway across the middle. Probably hideous, but we loved it. It had a great long avenue, about a mile long. Yeah. And it wasn't a particularly beautiful house. It was sort of castellated, Victorianized, probably quite ugly, but we loved it. we went there every summer, and we went there sometimes at Christmas and or Easter. And so we were half the time in England, half the time in Ireland, really, basically.
And so the house, was it built by the Welches? Who originally built it?
No, it belonged to my grandmother's family, who were Wilson Slaters. Actually, I don't know who originally built it. I mean, I really don't know. My brother would probably know. Mm-hmm. But they'd been there, you know, quite a long time, as far as I know, and maybe there was probably a previous house before it. But it had the most beautiful yard, the most amazing yard, with a sort of high wall all around it and a lovely sort of arched entrance. And the stables were all, you know, the old ones where the stable was inside, and they were all cobbled. And it was an idyllic place.
I'm here in Oxfordshire, and I'm talking to Maurice Fitzgerald, the Duke of Leinster, and it's lovely to be here in your company. Okay. Tell me about your titles. How many titles have you?
I've never really counted them up, but starting from the bottom is Baron Offaly and Baron Kildare, Viscount Leinster of Taplow. Then it'll be the Earl of Kildare, the Earl of Offaly, Marquess of Kildare, and Duke of Leinster.
I think your family tree goes back to...
Well, we arrived in Ireland sort of in the early 1100s. No, the castle I was brought up into, they finished building that in 1180. But we had been there for a number of years before that.
Of what castle?
That Kilkay, which is on the what I call the Carlow Kildare border, between two towns called Castle Dermot and Kildare. And as Castle Dermot was a big centre of education way before the Normans came, it was one of the main places of education.
So you're the ninth Duke.
Yeah.
And can you tell me your connection exactly? If you go back, your father, what was your father's name?
Gerald. We were very boring. We didn't have very many Christian names. It was all Gerald, Thomas, or Robert, or things like that. There are a few that break the trend, but we were quite boring, and most of us only ever had one Christian name.
Yes.
Yeah.
So your grandfather, he was the interesting man. He was the fifth Duke of Leinster, but he was the Marquess of...
He would have been a lot... there were an awful lot more Marquesses. Oh, no, there wouldn't have been. The Marquesses would have been the same number as the Dukedom, as they were both formed fairly close to each other. Because when Emily Gordon Lennox married the then Earl of Kildare... her godfather became was the then George, I think George III.
Yes.
And he, I always say that he didn't like his goddaughter being married to a mere earl, so the Duke was promoted quickly up to dukedom. So I don't know whether that's true, but I always felt that he'd like his goddaughter being married to just a mere earl.
George Stackpool, well known for his antique shop in Adair and his television appearances. I spoke to George at his home in Ballinacorty in County Limerick, and there we looked over some old family photograph albums, and he pointed out his grandfather's house, Edenville, and the gardens there in County Clare.
That was the garden at Edenville.
Oh, yes.
Which was all terraced down to the lake and is going to be fully restored, which is so exciting. The greenhouse just isn't there, but it's going to all be rebuilt. It's so exciting to see it all coming together again. So, I mean, here we are, Castle Crown, Lothclere House. I mean, it gives you an insight, these albums, into the sort of the early part of the 20th century, end of the night, you know.
Yeah.
And Italy was obviously a place where they all went, the gentry all went off for their holidays and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And Maidenhead to the rowing and... There's father again. And you see that there, the fascinating look. Going on picnic. Look at their dress from today.
Yes.
We all dress minimally now. They're all in thick tweed coats and whatever. But it gives you an insight, I think, into a family life or whatever. There they are shooting in 1909 at Edenville. So it's... there you are again in cars, and there's cricket. Cricket, I think people don't realise, was the most played sport in Ireland in the 1900s.
The
big house and the military. And the military were here, of course. Yeah. I mean, the British Army were stationed around. But it was more people played cricket than anything else. I mean, you forget about hurling and all the rest of it. It was sort of unknown in those days. It was cricket.
I'm here in County Sligo, just outside Sligo in Markree, a castle, and I'm with Charles and Mary Cooper. And it's lovely to be here in the gardener's house.
Yes.
And so it's quite... a difference. It must be an extraordinary difference to you to be living here now after so many years in the castle.
Well, yeah, so. Yes. I mean, we were brought up in a wing. We know. I was four when they closed down the main house, and we moved into a wing. And I was brought up in the wing basically, along with my siblings. There's five of us. I'm the youngest, and then we ended up here. I never expected to, but we have.
So would you describe the castle? Is there another castle in the country like it? Lismore Castle, for example. How different are they?
Well, Lismore is smaller.
Yeah.
And there are few as big as Markree, I think, in the country. I can't relate it to anything.
Yeah.
And
how did it become... How many bedrooms in it?
Well, when we ran it as a hotel, we had 30 bedrooms. All in the main building. I mean, it is big.
Yeah.
And then the dining rooms and all the ancillary.
It was lived in
as a full castle, for a very short period of time. In that, when did you say the last?
The last brick was added in 1895.
Which is on the, engraved. And
the first room was closed up in 1902.
Yeah. And that's how really short period it was lived in as a full
Castle.
A full house. Yeah. Basement.
7 years.
Basement entirely. And the kitchen's down in the basements. They were the first thing to move up into upstairs.
So my grandfather died in the Boer War.
Yes.
And my great-grandfather, sorry. My grandfather was very young. He was in his teens. So he didn't... That's when they started closing it up. And then, of course, the various Land Acts and Windham Acts and so on. So I imagine the income started declining at that point. So they started closing it up.
So it was shedding its life, if you like, all that time.
Yeah.
And even when you had it as a hotel, did you have it running as using all the rooms? Or?
No, we never used.
No, we never got the whole thing used, no.
Yeah. Much.
We were heading for it.
It was built initially to guard the river. It was on
the river.
We
believe the river, the Unshin, which drains like Arrow, was the river. And there is a ford there. And we believe it was built by the McDonoughs guarding the ford.
The river does quite a bend there.
Yeah.
So the river, the castle's sort of sitting, and it's surrounded on nearly three sides by the river.
Yeah.
So it is naturally a
defensive position. Yeah.
Position.
It is, but it's also it's also aesthetically a very beautiful castle.
Mm.
But there to
beauty
to
in the eyes of the holder,
to impress,
isn't it?
or would you say boat or?
I think that the houses competed, didn't they, throughout Ireland? And I think there was a big competition with Birr. I always feel there's a big competition here with Birr, particularly in that we had a suspension bridge. We had an observatory, you know. So those two houses, I think, must have really vied against each other to be bigger and better than each other.
And they did have a bigger telescope than Birr at one point.
The telescope here was bigger than Birr.
It was a different type.
Now, I don't know, but people say that one, I don't know which is better, one was a reflector and one was a refractor. I don't know the difference. So whilst Birr made it be bigger, it wasn't better.
Where is the telescope here now?
Now that's interesting. It was sold. And I heard it went to the University of Manila in the Philippines in the 20s.
It travelled a long way.
I don't know how it got there. It ended up, I believe, in Singapore in the outbreak of the Second World War.
Yeah.
And the Japanese thought it was a gun and they destroyed it.
Really?
Yeah.
That's what I'm told.
Yeah.
I've no reason to doubt it.
But you were able to track it down to...
Yes.
...to there. To...
But the magnifying glass, I think, still exists.
Yeah.
And that's still in...
Yeah.
The Philippines.
I'm here in a lovely village, Bampton, in Oxfordshire, and I'm talking to Lord Dunamore. Knocklofty House and Estate in County Tipperary was the home of the Earls of Dunamore for hundreds of years. I spoke to the current Earl, Michael Healy Hutchinson. Can I talk to you first about your background and the title?
Well, I suppose you could say the family started its more modern history with the provost, who was provost of Trinity College. And
what was his name?
I think he was called John. And he got the first title. And he was a TD, and obviously quite eminent in Irish politics at the time. We were talking about 1700 or something like that. And he was the sort of start of the family, really.
Okay.
The modern version of it, anyway.
And the family seat?
Is in Tipperary, near Clonmel. And my family got the land, I've always understood, at the time of the... I think it was Henry VIII... was abolishing the Catholic establishments and stealing the money from the Catholics, if you like. And among other things, he gave something like 10,000 acres of land in Tipperary to my ancestors and bought their farm in Norfolk And in exchange for the 10,000 acres, he had to be prepared to produce 50 soldiers when required, which wasn't very often, but it did happen, I believe.
During the troubles in Northern Ireland, your parents were kidnapped by the
IRA. They were, yes.
Do you remember? You remember very well, I'm sure, that time.
It's written hard into my memory.
Where were you living at that time?
I was in Paris at the time,
okay,
when we heard about it. And, of course, we flew straight to Ireland to see if there was anything we could do to help, which wasn't much. But it didn't last very long. They were kidnapped for about 4 or 5 days, I think.
Yeah.
And then they were released. We understand by the offices of the Pope. Mark would probably know more about it than I do.
I see, yeah.
But my understanding is that the Pope brought pressure to bear on the head of the church in Ireland, who apparently knew who these people were and told them they'd be excommunicated if they didn't release my parents immediately, because the Pope was a friend of my father, personal friend. And my father used to go and see him several times a year to discuss how they could bring the churches a bit closer to each other. And so when my father was kidnapped, the Pope was rather shocked.
The Landed Gentry in Ireland Oral History Collection is a collection of 26 oral history recordings and have recently been posted on our webpage. My name is Maurice O'Keefe, and I look forward to bringing you another podcast soon.